Chapter 24. One September evening, 4 months later, when Mrs. Barnett was in perfect health, and Mrs. Down, but a weakening memory, an errand boy paused to rest himself in front of Mr. Barnett's old house, depositing his basket on one of the windowsills. The street was not yet lighted, but there were lights in the house, and at intervals a flitting shadow fell upon the blind at his elbow. Words also were audible from the same apartment, and they seemed to be those of persons in violent altercation. But the boy could not gather their purport, and he went on his way. 10 minutes afterwards the door of Barnett's house opened, and a tall, closely veiled lady in a traveling dress came out, and descended the freestone steps. The servant stood in the doorway watching her as she went with a measured tread down the street. When he had been out of sight for some minutes, Barnett appeared at the door from within. "Did your mistress leave word where she was going?" he asked. "No, sir." "Is the carriage ordered to meet her anywhere?" "No, sir." "Did she take a latchkey?" "No, sir." Barnett went in again, sat down in his chair, and leaned back. Then in solitude and silence he brooded over the bitter emotions that filled his heart. It was for this that he had gratuitously restored her to life, and made his union with another impossible. The evening drew on, and nobody came to disturb him. At bedtime he told the servants to retire, that he would sit up for Mrs. Barnett himself. And when they were gone he leaned his head upon his hand and mused for hours. The clock struck one, two, still his wife came not, and, with impatience added to depression, he went from room to room till another weary hour had passed. This was not altogether a new experience for Barnett, but as he had never before so prolonged her absence. At last he sat down again and fell asleep. He awoke at 6 o'clock to find that S.E. had not returned. In searching about the rooms he discovered that S.E. had taken a case of jewels which had been hers before her marriage. At 8 a note was brought him. It was from his wife, in which she stated that S.E. had gone by the coach to the house of a distant relative near London, and expressed a wish that certain boxes, articles of clothing, and so on, might be sent to her forthwith. The note was brought to him by a waiter at the Black Bull Hotel, and had been written by Mrs. Barnett immediately, before she took her place in the stage. By the evening this order was carried out, and Barnett, with a sense of relief, walked out into the town. A fair had been held during the day, and the large clear moon which rose over the most prominent hill flung its light upon the booths and standings that still remained in the street, mixing its rays curiously with those from the flaring naphtha lamps. The town was full of country people who had come in to enjoy themselves, and on this account Barnett strolled through the streets unobserved. With a certain recklessness he made for the harbor road, and presently found himself by the shore, where he walked until he came to the spot near which his friend the kindly Mrs. Down had lost her life, and his own wife's life had been preserved. A tremulous pathway of bright moonshine now stretched over the water which had engulfed them, and not a living soul was near. Here he ruminated on their characters, and next on the young girl in whom he now took a more sensitive interest than at the time when he had been free to marry her. Nothing, so far as he was aware, had ever appeared in his own conduct to show that such an interest existed. He had made it a point of the utmost strictness to hinder that feeling from influencing in the faintest degree his attitude towards his wife. And this was made all the more easy for him by the small demand Mrs. Barnett made upon his attentions, for which he ever evinced the greatest contempt, thus unwittingly giving him the satisfaction of knowing that their severance owed nothing to jealousy, or, indeed, to any personal behavior of his at all. Her concern was not with him or his feelings, as she frequently told him, but that as he had, in a moment of weakness, thrown herself away upon a common burgher, when she might have aimed at, and possibly brought down, a peer of the realm. Her frequent depreciation of Barnett in these terms had at times been so intense that he was sorely tempted to retaliate on her egotism by owning that he loved at the same low level on which he lived. But prudence had prevailed, for which he was now thankful. Something seemed to sound upon the shingle behind him over and above the raking of the wave. He looked round, and a slight girlish shape appeared quite close to him. He could not see her face, because it was in the direction of the moon. Apostrophe Mr. Barnett? Apostrophe apostrophe the rambler said, in timid surprise. The voice was the voice of Lucy Saville. Yes, apostrophe said Barnett. How can I repay you for this pleasure? Apostrophe, I only came because the night was so clear. I am now on my way home. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I am glad we have met. I want to know if you will let me do something for you, to give me an occupation as an idle man. I am sure I ought to help you, for I know you are almost without friends. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she hesitated. Why should you tell me that? Apostrophe, she said. In the hope that you will be frank with me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I am not altogether without friends here. But I am going to make a little change in my life, to go out as a teacher of freehand drawing and practical perspective. Of course I mean on a comparatively humble scale, because I have not been specially educated for that profession. But I am sure I shall like it much. Apostrophe, you have an opening? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I have not exactly got it, but I have advertised for one. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Lucy, you must let me help you. Apostrophe, apostrophe, not at all. Apostrophe, apostrophe, you need not think it would compromise you, or that I am indifferent to delicacy. I bear in mind how we stand. It is very unlikely that you will succeed as teacher of the class you mention, so let me do something of a different kind for you. Say what you would like, and it shall be done. Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, if I can't be a drawing mistress or governess, or something of that sort, I shall go to India and join my brother. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I wish I could go abroad, anywhere, everywhere with you, Lucy, and leave this place and its associations forever. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she played with the end of her bonnet string, and hastily turned aside. Don't ever touch upon that kind of topic again, apostrophe, she said, with a quick severity not free from anger. It simply makes it impossible for me to see you, much less receive any guidance from you. No, thank you, Mr. Barnett. You can do nothing for me at present, and as I suppose my uncertainty will end in my leaving for India, I fear you never will. If ever I think you can do anything, I will take the trouble to ask you. Till then, goodbye. Apostrophe, the tone of her latter words was equivocal, and while he remained in doubt whether a gentle irony was or was not in word with their sound, she swept lightly round and left him alone. He saw her form get smaller and smaller along the damp belt of sea sand between ebb and flood, and when she had vanished round the cliff into the harbor road, he himself followed in the same direction. That her hopes from an advertisement should be the single thread which held Lucy Saville in angle, and was too much for Barnett. On reaching the town he went straight to the residence of Down, now a widower with four children. The young motherless brood had been sent to bed about a quarter of an hour earlier, and when Barnett entered he found Down sitting alone. It was the same room as that from which the family had been looking out for Down at the beginning of the year, when Down had slipped into the gutter, and his wife had been so enviably tender towards him. The old neatness had gone from the house. Articles lay in places which could show no reason for their presence, as if momentarily deposited there some months ago, and forgotten ever since. There were no flowers. Things were jumbled together on the furniture which should have been in cupboards, and the place in general had that stagnant, unrenovated air which usually pervades the maimed home of the widower. Down soon renewed his customary full-worded lament over his wife, and even when he had worked himself up to tears, went on volubly, as if a listener were a luxury, to be enjoyed whenever he could be caught. She was a treasure beyond compare, Mr. Barnett. I shall never see such another. Nobody now to nurse me, nobody to console me in those daily troubles, you know, Barnett, which make consolation so necessary to a nature like mine. It would be unbecoming to repine, for her spirit's home was elsewhere, the tender light in her eyes always showed it. But it is a long dreary time that I have before me, and nobody else can ever fill the void left in my heart by her loss, nobody, nobody. ... and down wiped his eyes again. She was a good woman in the highest sense, ... gravely answered Barnett, who, though Down's words drew genuine compassion from his heart, could not help feeling that a tender reticence would have been a finer tribute to Mrs. Down's really sterling virtues than such a second-class lament as this. I have something to show you, ... Down resumed, producing from a drawer a sheet of paper on which was an elaborate design for a canopied tomb. This has been sent me by the architect, but it is not exactly what I want. ... You have got Jones to do it, I see, the man who is carrying out my house, ... said Barnett, as he glanced at the signature to the drawing. Yes, but it is not quite what I want. I want something more striking, more like a tomb I have seen in St. Paul's Cathedral. Nothing less will do justice to my feelings, and how far short of them that will fall. ... Barnett privately thought the design a sufficiently imposing one as it stood, even extravagantly ornate. But, feeling that he had no right to criticize, he said gently, Down, should you not live more in your children's lives at the present time, and soften the sharpness of regret for your own past, by thinking of their future? ... Yes, yes. But what can I do more? ... asked Down, wrinkling his forehead hopelessly. It was with anxious slowness that Barnett produced his reply, the secret object of his visit tonight. Did you not say one day that you ought by rights to get a governess for the children? ... Down admitted that he had said so, but that he could not see his way to it. The kind of woman I should like to have, he said, would be rather beyond my means. No. I think I shall send them to school in the town, when they are old enough to go out alone. ... Now, I know of something better than that. The late Lieutenant Saville's daughter, Lucy, wants to do something for herself in the way of teaching. She would be inexpensive, and would answer your purpose as well as anybody for 6 or 12 months. She would probably come daily, if you were to ask her, and so your housekeeping arrangements would not be much affected. ... I thought as he had gone away, said the solicitor, musing. Where does she live? ... Barnett told him, and added that, if Down should think of her as suitable, he would do well to call, as soon as possible, or she might be on the wing. If you do see her, he said, it would be advisable not to mention my name. She is rather stiff in her ideas of me, and it might prejudice her against a course if she knew that I recommended it. Down promised to give the subject his consideration, and nothing more was said about it just then. But when Barnett rose to go, which was not till nearly bedtime, he reminded Down of the suggestion, and went up the street to his own solitary home with a sense of satisfaction at his promising diplomacy in a charitable cause. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.